This is James Corbett, and you're tuned into CorbettReport.com on the 5th of May 2011. Today I'm joined on the line from the Emerald Isle of Ireland by Brian Smith, a researcher and activist who hosts his own radio program and solutions-based social networking site at tnsradio.com. Brian Smith, thanks for joining us today on the Corbett Report.
Well, thank you, James. Thanks for asking me on. Good to be here.
Absolutely. No problem having you here, especially since you were kind enough to invite me on your TNS radio program recently. So it's good to have to return the favor and have you on the Corbett Report. But I guess this is probably the first time that a lot of the listeners have heard of you before. So tell us a little bit about yourself, where you come from, and what you're doing out in Ireland.
Well, as I said, I'm from Ireland. I suppose I was like a lot of people. I was very much, you know, asleep at the wheel. And I think the events of 9/11 kind of woke me up to a few things. Still took me a few years to get my head around it. But, you know, as time went on, when I saw, like, you know, the wars that followed on after that, and then I saw the London bombings, and I saw a few other things happening, and I started to look into it a bit more. And then, as I say, a whole new rabbit hole opened for me, you know. So then I started looking into, there's a guy in the UK by the name of John Harris. He runs a site called TPUC, I think, .org, I think that's the website. And he talks about free man on the land and sovereignty. And again, this was fairly new to me. And I looked at it and I thought, you know, something, I mean, I had to watch it a couple of times, but this all started making a lot of sense to me, you know, and I thought, no wonder we're in the mess we're in. So, you know, and then just things went on from there, and I thought, is there a group like this in Ireland? And it didn't seem to be, but I did find this radio station, TNS Radio, that were online or on the internet, and I got to know the guys on there, and I've met a good few of them, and they had some time slots on the radio station to do a show, so I do a show on a Friday night at 9 o'clock my time here. So
that's right, and people can tune in at tnsradio.com?
That's right, tnsradio.ning.com.
tnsradio.ning.com, right. And I will put a link to that in the documentation section for the interview, so people can go and follow that and go right there and hopefully tune in on a Friday night, 9 p.m. Dublin time. So
that's right.
Right, so that's kind of the brief synopsis, and I think that's probably a story that will resonate with many of the listeners, and I myself, of course, also, when I first started researching into 9/11 several years after the fact and started discovering the incredible anomalies of what was going on, that was really the first of the rabbit holes that I went down. But as I'm sure many of the listeners out there will realize by now, it's only one of many, many rabbit holes that are out there.
Absolutely.
And sometimes we get perhaps distracted trying to follow all the rabbit holes and see where they all go. And it is interesting in a way, but sometimes we get distracted from what the real goal should be, is finding solutions and finding ways out of this mess. And that's something that you're concentrating on in your work and talking about things like the Freeman on the Land idea. So start telling us about some of the solution-based ideas that you've come across and what kind of work you're doing.
It is true, because, you know, there's so much information out there, and it is very easy to get distracted and bogged down in all of it. And then you find out, you're not doing anything. You have all this knowledge and you're not doing anything. I think you had an interview with Adrian Salbucci, didn't you, the other day?
Yes, that's right.
And he was very interesting too. I like a lot what he says, and it's right. You know, we've got all this information, but we're not turning it into knowledge and using it to the best effect. So that's where I kind of saw the whole notion of what sovereignty means. And I mean, it's a word that's put out there a lot. You know, we hear it a lot, particularly these days, you know, sovereign debt and, you know, national sovereignty and, you know, but where I come in is where, what I am, you know, personal sovereignty. So what am I in this world, you know? And I realized that I was born free. I was born sovereign. My body is my own. To me, when you're sovereign, you treat your body as your own nation. So you have to put your own nation right first, get it in order. So you look after yourself, like physically, mentally, and spiritually. Get yourself right, and you you start gaining, once you get yourself into that position, you things start becoming clearer, and you're focused on that. And you know, I find that information kind of comes to you, you can deal with it a lot better instead of just getting bogged down on one thing. Like, I mean, there's people out there talking about 9/11. There's people just spending all their time on 9/11, but that happened 10 years ago. And we still don't have the answers. I mean, we know it was an inside job and whatever, but we don't know why or who did it or whatever. So why continue to focus on that? We need to get out there and change the system because it's wrong. The economy, as we know, has gone down the tubes. People are suffering big time. There's wars, there's famines, the whole lot. And people now have to start looking to themselves and not to governments to get them out of this mess. Governments have let us down through the centuries, really, but particularly in this day and age. They are not acting in our interests at all. So we have to take that back. We have empowered them. You know, we haven't... we've given them... We've swapped our God-given rights for benefits and privileges. And they can take them away just as quickly.
Very important point. Well, that's a good point. In fact, what you've said is really, in some ways, very, very simple truth, but one that seems to escape a lot of people, and it's one that has been stressed in a lot of the religions that have been propounded through the centuries and a lot of different philosophies and ideas, but we keep coming back to it time and time again. And that's something, for example, that I think in the American Revolution, some of the founding fathers expressed quite beautifully in documents like the Declaration of Independence, that people are free and independent, and they have certain rights that are completely unalienable and can't be taken away by anyone for any reason whatsoever. So that's something that we have to return to and have to regain our understanding. And you raise the important point of rights and privileges and those types of concepts. So let's start getting into some of those and how we have had our unalienable human rights taken away from us over the years.
Yeah, well, it's a big plan that they've had. I mean, the powers that be have really done their homework on this, and it all basically starts with your birth certificate. So when you're born, you know, your parents give you your name and you register with the state. So now they say they own you, but actually what they do is they own only your name. Your name is not you. So you have to kind of get your head around that, to think that, you know, I am not my name. My name is just something that I use. So once you're registered, that means, you know, your birth certificate is actually then basically sold on the international markets, you know, into the futures markets, whereby, you know, there's a price on your head and your stock and your collateral, and that's where all the national debt comes from the people. And so, you know, that means that they say, okay, you know, you're going to pay taxes then for the rest of your life. And in return for that, well, we'll give you, you know, your pension, and we'll give you, you know, social welfare and stuff like this. But your rights are being completely, your God-given rights are being taken away completely, because you have to consent to this fiction. You know, governments are a fiction. Corporations are a fiction. They're not living, they're dead. And if you even look in, Black's Law Dictionary, you can see a lot of the terms of what they mean, and even look up what the word person means. A person is a corporation. That's how Black's Law Dictionary defines it. So what they do is they trick you into thinking that you're a person, that you're a corporation, so that's why how you can contract with them. So when you look into the laws of contract, you can only contract with a flesh and blood living soul. So it's a big trick. It's a big master plan they have here. And that's why no one seems to see through it and think, wait a minute, I don't have to consent to any of this at all. I don't have to recognize any of this. Now, it's difficult because, you know, they have, you know, we're in the system they've created, and it's difficult to break away from it completely. But you can break away for one step at a time, and you can look at things that are enslaving you at the moment. And I think one of the biggest things is debt. you know, we're all, we're, you know, that it's bringing down the world, the whole, you know, the whole concept of debt, which again is a fiction. It's created out of thin air. But somehow we feel we have to pay it back.
Right, yes. We get saddled with the debt that's created out of nothing by the banksters through their magic tricks, exactly. And you raise an important point that so much of the loss of liberties that we've, well, I don't know we, but certainly some people have seemed to be putting up with more and more these days. It's just a question largely of giving our consent to this happening. And I think that's a really important part of the whole puzzle. Mm. So what are some of the ways that we give our consent to our own enslavement?
Again, we, you know, when we elect a government, I mean, we all think that when we elect a government, they're going to act in our best interests, but, you know, they don't. I'll give you, you know, an example of what's happened here in Ireland. You know, they allowed a property bubble to go out of control, and I could see the writing on the wall a few years ago that this wasn't going to work out well. And now the whole country has been plunged into huge debt, and the IMF and the European Central Bank have moved in now, and they're like basically taking this country apart. And we had a general election not too long ago, and we had a new government in, but they're not, you know, they had these pledges that they're going to change things, but they're not, they're just doing exactly the same thing. And I'm trying to say to people, you know, why aren't, you know, really what's required, I mean, whether it can happen or not, is like the whole population to go right up to the government buildings and stay there for a week and say no. But this is the difficulty we face. Will people do that? People are too caught up in their own things. But we, as I say, we give consent too easily. We don't think about it. We don't think that we're being enslaved. And, it, you know, as I say, it's a great trick that they pull over us. They just, you know, it's very Orwellian, the whole thing. You know, just sit there, watch your TV, be good, don't ask questions, we look after it all. And, you know, it's very difficult to see a way out of this for people. I mean...
Hmm. I think Orwellian is an apt term for it, because that brings to mind the ways that language is used to manipulate our political reality. And I think language is very much employed against us, and it's the language of the courts that a lot of people don't know. And you mentioned earlier, yeah, for example, right, the word person that has a certain legal meaning, but most people don't know what that is. So that's when we talk about something like sovereignty, I mean, what is the real meaning of that?
Well, again, as I would say, when you're sovereign, you know, when you say I'm sovereign, you're basically saying that my body belongs to me exclusively, right? It's my property to do it whatever I want, as long as you do not cause harm or loss to anybody else. And that's it. That's the only law we really need to worry about. It's common law, really. You know, just don't, you know, do what you need to do, but don't cause harm or loss. And nobody has any right to tell you what to do or how to live your life. You can live your life according, you know, to whatever way you want, as long, again, as you don't cause harm or loss to anybody else. So, and it's not really a movement. We hear about, you know, the sovereignty movement. I mean, I don't like that word movement, you know. I think it's a kind of a herd mentality kind of situation. The movements, in my opinion, don't generally work. But
that's right. And it seems a bit of a contradiction to have a movement of people who all want to act independently and think independently. Yeah. I mean, it is kind of a contradiction in terms, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. And they generally tend to get infiltrated and whatever too, so they tend to fall apart after a while.
Exactly right. And I think something that a lot of people who are, I guess, of like mind are fighting is the centralization of power and control. So it doesn't make sense to fight that in a centralized, organized fashion rather than simply people doing what they think seems most natural to them.
That's right. I mean, and I think people will come together as one. I mean, we're all one anyway. So we come together as one, but we don't have to say, well, I'm a particular movement and here's a label. And I think that there's the whole notion of the sovereignty movement, and we heard all about, you know, back in the States in the 90s, or wasn't it, a lot of these militias were setting up and they were kind of expressing their sovereign rights and everything, and they were
right,
labeled
those dangerous
as terrorists.
Militias, yes.
That's right, yeah. So, and it kind of, you know, the authorities clamped down on them big time and kind of sent it to drift off a bit. It seems to be coming back, but again, you know, it's the whole notion of like people going off and living in the mountains and into the woods and breaking away from society. But I mean, again, why do you need to do that? You know, why set up your own community? I mean, we already live in a community.
That's right. So, the idea is to take our communities back and make them what they're supposed to be, rather than abandon them to be lost, I guess. Mm. Well, that's a good point. And in the American context, as you mentioned, the militia movement, of course, was demonized in the 90s because of their crazy, far out, weird demands for, you know, personal sovereignty and things like that.
Yeah.
And so they were demonized and set up for the OKC bombing and things like that. And then, but how about in the Irish context? I mean, it's a very different political context and different philosophical and historical context. What's the societal context to that?
I mean, it kind of goes back a long time, actually, because we had a system in this country which kind of lasted for thousands of years. It's called the Brehon Law System. Like, that's spelled Brehon. And Brehon is the Gaelic word for judge. And basically, whatever community you lived in, there was a Brehon. So if there was any kind of dispute, whatever, the Brehon would be called, and he would sort it out. And they had to be pretty good. I think they had to train for about 20 years to become one. So for example, if you had two farmers and one guy owns a cow and the bull from the neighboring farm jumps over and has his wicked way with the cow and there's a calf, you know, who owns the calf? So the Brehon would be called to, you know, let's try and work this one out. And if they can't work it out, he then has to bring his own calf and give it to one of the, you know, injured parties. So there's absolutely no dispute whatsoever, and everyone's happy. But but the thing is, he's got to be good because it's not in his interest to give a calf away either. So this lasted for a long time, and people, you know, even into the early Christian times. I mean, there was Christianity in Ireland, but it wasn't Roman Christianity. Again, it was very much based on the land and the environment and whatever, and recognizing, yes, there is a God, but, you know, not in the context that we know it today. And then that all changed through time, because then Ireland was invaded by first the Vikings, then the Normans, and then the English. And it's actually only when the English came along, really, that things got bad, because they did away with the whole Brehon system. A lot of the chieftains and whatever fled Ireland. A lot of them went to Spain and France. It was that was called the Flight of the Earls. I think it was back in the 16th century. And all the Brehons were killed. And then we had the English system brought in on us, and we had a thing called the penal laws, where people were taken off their land, and they were made, you know, the land was all taken over by the planters, and these people were slaves on their own land. And it's like history repeating itself again now, because Ireland is basically up for sale at the moment. They want to sell off everything that we have, you know, our natural resources. They talk that there's about a couple of trillion dollars worth of oil and gas off the Irish coast. We've got, I believe they've found gold and silver deposits in parts of the country as well. They're selling off things like our bogs, which give us peat, which is fuel. Like, that was always free to people. You could always just dig up your own, you know, your turf. Now people are going to be charged for this type of thing. You know, we're basically going to be, again, slaves on our own land. But I say we did have a good history of this. This is in our history. And there's an awful lot of people looking back on that now and thinking, well, can we get this back again?
Hmm. Well, that's the thing that I find particularly baffling, because the historical context of Ireland is such that the people certainly do know what it's like to live under oppression, the oppression of the British Crown for so many centuries, and they finally overthrew that yoke, and then several decades later decided to go back into the European Union and to vote for the Treaty of Lisbon and all of that. It just seems quite contradictory.
Well, I think, you know, we're a bit much like the Americans. Once they got their independence, they were only really independent for about 10 years, weren't they? And in Ireland, I think it was only about 2 years, because really, after getting our independence, then we adopted, you know, the British legal system, which is the bar. You know, bar means British Accredited Registry. So that's the legal system run by the Crown. You know, and our main banks are all linked with the Inter Alpha Group, which are in the City of London. So, you know, we had a financial system and a legal system run from England. So I never think we had a really true independence. We never really were a true republic. Well, and again, you know, when we did get our independence too, like we were so dominated by Britain, they were the main trading partner, and they completely, you know, Ireland was never given a chance to develop. It was always a very poor country up to really the 60s. And a lot of people emigrated to all parts of the world. And it was never really given a chance to develop. And then, of course, we were lulled, you know, fooled into, oh, let's join the European Union, or the EEC as it was back then. And it was all great for a while, you know. But now, you know, we're paying the piper, as they say.
Yeah. Well, that's the important point, I think. I mean, I think the independence is only as realistic as the independence from the establishment banking oligarchy that rules in so many different countries around the world. And I think that's one of the fundamental ways of really detaching yourself from the system is getting off of that banking establishment oligarchy hierarchy that's set up and which propagates the bar and all of the legal system. So that's it. So on the personal level, I understand that you're involved in things like trying to get people who are having problems with their mortgage and things out of their difficulties. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Again, it's a matter of doing a little bit of research into this and figuring out how the financial system works and how banking works. You know, and fractional reserve banking, we've heard all about that. And you know, once you realize that mortgages are a fraud, you know, you have to look into a little bit of contract law as well. Now, it's not that, you know, it's not people, once they people hear the word law, they kind of, oh, I don't like the sound of that, because, you know, it is, well, it comes across quite complicated. But actually, when you start looking into it a little bit, it's quite simple. But it's just a matter of getting used to some of the words that they use. And that's why I would recommend, you know, people get a copy of Black's Law Dictionary. You can get it online and just look at the terms, look at the words that they use. And it suddenly all starts to make sense. So what I've done myself is I've asked my bank to prove to me that there's a debt, because all debts are really an allegation. There's an allegation of a debt that I supposedly owe. So I decided, okay, if there's a debt, prove it to me. And if you can prove it to me, I'll be honorable and I will settle this debt. You know? Now, they haven't replied, you know? And I don't know if they will, and I don't know what the next step will be. But I'm going to actually probably write them another letter now in another week. I gave them about, 30 days. This is only something I've done recently to reply to the first one. So that's nearly up now. So I'll just send them another one and give them 10 days. And then after that, I would say, well, I'm not going to pay it anymore. If you can't prove it to me, why should I pay it? It's quite simple, really.
It certainly is, isn't it? And so yeah. you're not just talking the talk. I mean, you're walking the walk as well.
Yeah, let's see if I got a letter here that I sent to them. I can just pull it up here. I'll just give you an idea of what I wrote. Yeah, hang on a second. Okay. Right, this is a letter that I have here now. I'll just kind of give you the brief questions what I asked. First of all, I said, I hereby formally request documentation to substantiate what, if any, debt or amount I lawfully owe you, or similarly, what, if any, obligation I have to repay monthly or other amounts in part or in full, and furthermore, any payments I've already made in the past. If all valid contract documentary evidence exists and is supplied, I'm more than happy to pay any and all amounts I lawfully owe. I'm hereby kindly requesting originals of the items below and listed those. And in doing so, please take note that a validly executed contract must contain full disclosure, a contract signed by both parties, mutual consideration, and lawful terms and conditions. And I said, I will be happy to pay any financial obligation that I might lawfully owe as soon as I receive three documents listed below. Validation of the debt, which is the actual accounting. Verification of your claim against me, that is a sworn affidavit or signed invoice, and a copy of the contract binding both parties. And I said, I won't enter into any verbal communications over the phone. I only accept written responses and, you know, blah, blah. And that was it. I signed it off. When you sign off on these things, a good idea is to write the word by, and a colon, and then your name, because what you're saying is that you're going by the name of Brian Smith or by the name of James Corbett, whatever. So you're not taking ownership of your name. And then you put on underneath that all rights reserved. So you're going down what that kind of a road called commercial redemption, which is quite a few people are doing. I'm quite wary of that because you are kind of, you know, entering into their ballpark. They make the rules and they can twist and turn them. So you need to know a lot about commercial redemption. But this is a all I'm doing here is I'm just asking a couple of questions first, and then once I won't get a reply to this. I know I won't, or I'll get a reply which will they'll try to say something else completely different. But they will not give me these documents that I'm looking for here. None. They will not do it. And I know of people who have actually written off their mortgages on the strength of doing these things. Now, you have to kind of keep at them for a little bit. You know, it could take a while. It's like a kind of an ongoing game of tennis, you know. So, but I know a couple of people who have actually have written off their mortgages. But, you know, a lot of people will be afraid about this. You know, they'll be thinking, oh, I can't do this, whatever. And but again, this we all go back to this whole concept of fear. We live in this fear-based system that, oh, you can't do this, you can't, you know, you have to pay your debts and all the rest of it. Yeah, I will pay any debt as long as it's valid, but this is fraud, so why should I participate in fraud? It's very simple, really, you know. So and there's what you can do then is, if you do not get your replies and then they start coming after you, like they might threaten you with legal action, whatever, well, then you just decide that you do not recognize them. And what I do is I have a roll of, you know, adhesive stickers. And when I get the letter, I know who it's from. I mean, you can open it if you want to, but, you know, it's best probably not to, just if you know who it's from. You'll see the return address normally is on the envelope as well. And what I write on the sticker is, I do not recognize you. I do not understand your intent. I have no international treaty with you. No assured value, no liability, return to sender. And you just send it back. That's it. You know, and I know, again, it sounds kind of out there a little bit, but again, I have done this with other things as well, and, you know, so far so good, and it's really lifted a huge burdens off me. I mean, I don't know where this is going to actually go myself, but so far it is working and it is helping me. And I mean, there is nothing, even if I am dragged in front of a judge looking at this will think, well, you know, I've behaved in an honourable fashion. I've asked the questions. And I think actually there's been a couple of court cases in America recently, and I can't forget the details, but I think there was a couple of people who took, I think it was Wells Fargo, to court and asked them to prove the debt or to show the original, you know, promissory note, and they couldn't do it because they sold it on. And those people have got their houses now, and they're mortgage free.
It is so mind-boggling to think that the whole system is so structured on fraud that these debts are. I mean, most people just assume that they are obligated to pay these debts because they think they've signed on to them, but they don't understand the fraud that's happening behind the scenes. And it is a fear that's stopping a lot of people from peeking behind that curtain and actually investigating whether they do owe anything to that.
They don't, because, well, first of all, I mean, we all know they sell the debts on, okay? And they make massive profits from that. And then that's where more debt is created from that again. They monetize your signature. That's why, again, it all goes back to your birth certificate and the name. They can monetize that and sell it on. And they make, you know, for example, if you took out a mortgage for, say, $200,000, right, you're going to be paying them back that plus interest. So you're talking maybe $350,000, I suppose, whatever. But by them selling on that debt, they probably made another $400,000 or $500,000 from you, just from you signing that document. So actually, you're entitled to probably go back to them and say, well, if give me half of that. You know? So there are people challenging them, you know. I think a lot of people could end up in kind of problems because they said they're going into their ballpark and they could mess up. I think the best thing what I'm doing is I just ask these questions, prove to me there's a debt, show it to me. If there is, I'll pay it. If there isn't, bye-bye. You know?
Yeah, it seems, it seems so remarkably simple that a lot of people won't be able to accept that that simple.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, as I said, it took me quite a while to get my head around this myself. You know, it's not something that you will just kind of wake up to. You do have to do a bit of research. I mean, I suppose I've been looking at this the best part of a year now, and it's only, as I said, about last month when I actually really thought, okay, I'm going to do this now. And, but, you know, as I said, it took me a while to read what other people did and to do the research on how mortgages work. And when it becomes clear to you, then you go, right, that's it. It is fraud, and I'm not participating in this fraud anymore. So I'm actually going to take action now.
Well, I would suggest people who are incredulous to at least begin by taking a look at the Mortgagegate crisis in America last year and the incredible fraud, the mind-boggling fraud that was going on, and just take a look at that as a starting point to understand how this system is based on just completely manufactured out-of-nothing debt that then gets sold on. And again, it's just such a mind-boggling system of fraud that it's hard for most people who are not fraudsters and would not think that way to even begin to comprehend. But this seems to be the type of thing that will result in days in court and that kind of, you know, in the justice system. Do you have any examples in Ireland of people who have gone to court and successfully been able to maneuver through the justice system there?
No, not that I know of, but I think it will start happening now that, you know, we're going to have a major mortgage crisis. It's quite similar to what happened in the States over here. And I think people will take this to the courts. But again, by doing that, you've got to be very, very careful because, again, you're going into their territory. And the system is stacked against you, so you've got to have your homework done. I'd rather just ask a couple of questions and then, if they don't answer me, well, then I don't recognize them anymore. I mean, even like a court, when people think about like a summons, again, look at Black's Law Dictionary and what the word summons means. It means an invitation. You know, so they're inviting me from my own punishment.
Yeah. Please attend your own punishment.
So I'll just, you know, it's decline, you know, sorry. And I'll do again that what I wrote on, you know, I do not recognize you. I do not understand your 10, and send it back. Now, again, they will probably send it back to me again. Now people will say, well, they'll just drag you into court anyway. Yes, that is a possibility. They will do that. But then you have to ask yourself this question. Well, who then is committing the crime? Because if they break into your house to grab you, first of all, it's breaking and entering into a private property. That's a crime. Assaulting you, that's a second crime. And then if they bring you before a judge and then put you in a cell, well, that's kidnapping. So they've committed crimes there. You know, while all I have done is I've just asked a couple of questions.
Indeed. Well, this is the type of thing that I think for people who are just dipping their toe into these waters, it can be quite overwhelming because there's such a bewildering array of different sites and different people suggesting different things. So how about for yourself? You've obviously referred to Black's Law Dictionary as a sort of indispensable tool in maneuvering through this morass. But how about people or organizations or websites or videos that you might recommend for people out there who are interested in learning more?
Yeah, well, first of all, again, you know, if you look, there's a couple of YouTube videos. One is called Money is Debt, which is kind of done as a cartoon, which I think is very good because it keeps things very simple. There's one, I think it's Bill Stills. Is that the guy?
Bill Stills, Secret of Oz?
Secret of Oz, yeah. Okay. That's another one, yeah.
And also, again, he was involved in the Money Masters.
That's right, yeah. Watch them. You know, again, they give you a good background of how the system works. then if you want to look into the kind of the law side of things, I'd look at tpuc.org. They're based in England, and there's a guy called John Harris. And there's a video called It's All an Illusion. It's an Illusion. I think it's just called It's an Illusion. And watch that, and he explains how, you know, governments are corporations, police forces are corporations, the judiciary, everything is all a corporation. And he explains that quite well, actually, because have you ever heard of Dun & Bradstreet?
It rings a bell, yeah.
It's a worldwide directory of corporations around the world, okay? So you can just type in your country, just type in the government, and there it is, corporation, registered corporation. The police force as well, everything, right down to your city councils, everything. They're all corporations. They're there for profit. And we give them our energy. And this is where we're going wrong. And that's why more people realize this, then we can all pull out of it together. You know, I mean, there's a good few people trying to do this now, but it's still too small. But the more people who look into this and realize that the whole system has been designed that the authorities are a corporation, which is a fiction. It's not living, it's dead. It doesn't have a soul. You do. You're a flesh and blood living soul. And they have fooled you into contracting with them because they call you a person or a Mr. or a Mrs. That's how they do it. You often know, I don't know if you know, James, if you get anything from the government, you know, letters regarding, say, taxes or anything, that, you know, your name tends to be in block capitals.
That is correct, yes.
Yeah. Well, that's, again, your straw man. Okay, so how do you define what a straw man is? Well, that's your legal fiction. That's the person. So they give you, you know, as I say, that they own your name, so they give you, you know, you have that name. It's not your name, it's their name, they own it now. But they try to attach you to that name. So they send everything to your straw man. So your straw man is actually only an agent for you. So by, you know, as you say, by signing the letters, when you're signing off letters by the name of you're not associating yourself with that name. So again, there's another little short video you can watch on YouTube called Meet Your Straw Man. And it's explained again quite well in that. It's only about 10 minutes. And it explains, like, from the day you were born, literally to the day you die, how they control you. So you kind of have to understand, you know, what the straw man is. And what else? A guy, I think a fellow Canadian there, Rob Menard. Have you ever heard of Rob Menard, James?
I certainly have, yeah. And yeah. We played, I can't think of the name of the video off the top of my head, but Bursting Bubbles of Government Deception is one of the previous episodes of this podcast, actually. So it's available as an audio download.
Yeah, that's it. You know, again, watch that. Again, I don't agree with everything that he does because, you know, again, this man knows his stuff, okay? He spends all his time on it, so he's very, very good at it. And that's why he's successful. So, again, I would urge people to, by all means, look at what he does. You learn an awful lot from what he does. But, you know, if you want to go down the road that he goes, you have to really do your homework on it because you could end up in trouble. So I just want to put that out there for people because I was looking at that myself. You know, things like writing up affidavits and notices of intent and this type of thing. You have to be careful with the wording because you could end up yourself contracting and they have you. And you're at their mercy then. But Rob Menard, I like a lot of what he does. He gives great information about how the system works and how actually you can challenge them in certain ways. You know,
that's right. That's kind of my take on this subject in a nutshell is that things like that are intensely fascinating. And when I listen to things like Mr. Menard, I know that he's put in so much research and there's so much going on. But it also is somewhat worrying the way that you do have to kind of enter into these games with the authorities in order to try to free yourself from it or to declare your freedom from it. And it does seem, you know, there's so many possible missteps and things that could go wrong. And it just, it lends itself to, I think, being able to be taken over by gurus and charlatans who will claim to have the answer in capital letters that will save everyone. But as we know, I don't think it's quite that. I don't want to say it's not that simple. I think it's actually even simpler. I think we just have to really realize our sovereignty and allow that to manifest itself in our life.
That is true. I mean, there's a lot of these free man groups setting up around, and they charge people then to join up to give for this information. And it's not always successful. I mean, a lot of people have tried it and it didn't work. So that's why I would, you know, stress that to people to really, you know, do your homework on this. There's a lot, you can learn an awful lot from it. But once you start playing with their rules, you're in their ballpark and they will test you. And if you're wrong, well, you could pay a heavy price. So as far as I'm concerned, I rather just ask one or two questions, you know, I don't get the answers, well, then I just don't recognize them anymore. That's it. I'm out of there.
Right.
That's
so,
you don't have to play all these word games. You know? You don't have to go through all this paperwork and stuff. You don't have to do any of that.
Exactly. All right. So you have recommended a lot of different videos and things for people to check into there. How about for yourself personally? People can, of course, listen in to your radio show on Friday nights, 9 p.m. Dublin time on tnsradio.ning.com. Do you have a personal website?
No, I don't know. But not only that, if they want to listen on any other nights, there's generally good shows that they most of them start at 9 o'clock Dublin time. Some of them start a bit earlier, but you know, there's some good shows on there, and where people talk about this type of thing, and there's kind of round table discussions and stuff like that. And
it seems to be kind of a social network type site. There's like forums.
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's forums, yeah, and people get together. We arrange meetups, you know, once a week they try to meet up in certain places. So you get to meet the people, you know, because unfortunately, you know, when you get involved with all these things, you're meeting people from around the world. You never see them. You're in a virtual reality, really. So it's good to be able to meet these people for real and talk about things. And And then when people have problems or whatever, there's people there that can help out. So it's kind of, it works well that way. And you say we don't try, you know, we try to keep away from that word movement. We're just there as a group of people who are just trying to do the right thing and help each other out and spread the word as much as we can. And that's it.
Indeed. Well, I certainly would hope that anyone who is on the lovely island of Ireland would take a look into that and hopefully get involved and start meeting some of the people who are of like mind and building the community that will be the solution. And that's so important. And yeah, I'm very envious of the people who are in Ireland. Of course, as listeners might know, I spent some time out there and I miss it very much.
Yeah, that's right. Well, see, as well as the advantage of Ireland, it's a small country. So it's easy enough for people to meet up and they don't have to travel great distances. So that's one advantage of that. But, you know, as I said, it is good to meet up with people because, I mean, when I started getting into this first, I thought I was on my own and I actually did question my own sanity at times because I thought, is this, you know, what's going on in the world? Is it me or is it really happening? And to actually then meet a bunch of people who, you know, knew what I was talking about and I thought, oh, yes, this is wonderful. It was a very freeing moment, I'll tell you.
It certainly is, because I think one of the tricks that's used against us is to try to convince us that we are alone, but it's very much not the case, and there are many, many people of like mind.
Yeah, and it is growing, as they, you know, there's over 1,000 members now on TNS Radio, which is great, and I mean, I'm not saying all of them are active, but at least 1,000 people have looked at it and gone in there and maybe have got something from it. And there is a kind of, you know, a good core of people in there who are actually really doing things. And it's not, again, just about debt. It's about things like growing your own gardens. You know, people are looking into things like the concept of free energy. I think there's one or two people trying to look at how you can run a car on water. You know, this type of thing. You know, there's all sorts of different things where people can try to just get away from this control grid we're in.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I think we're going to draw things to a conclusion there, but certainly I hope we can check in with you later and see how your canary in the coal mine experiments with getting rid of the
I'll let you know on that one. Yeah. As I say, it'll be a bit of an ongoing game of tennis. I think this will be for a little while. But, you know, when I sent that letter off, it really gave me, you know, I thought, yes, now I'm doing something now. And it does it's very freeing, and it gets that monkey off your back, and you don't have to worry about this anymore. That's what people are worried about. People, you know, it's funny when people get these threatening letters in the mail, you know, they're being threatened by a piece of paper. It's crazy. A piece of paper.
Exactly.
And,
right.
You know, and these are driving people, unfortunately, and you see it here in Ireland now, the suicide rates are going up. People who've had their businesses and they're folding now because they can't run their business anymore or they can't feed their families and whatever. And they're killing themselves. I mean, this is crazy. This has to stop.
It certainly does. And I think we are working together to try to seek solutions. So I hope people take a look at tnsradio.ning.com and hopefully get involved and start spreading some solutions and solution-based ideas. All right, Brian Smith, it's great to talk to you today, and I thank you for joining us. Thank you for taking the time.
Thanks very much, James. Appreciate that. Thank you.